directly in. I'm also acutely aware we get to this point that I'm all that stands between you and lunch. So I've learned over time to be wise about that. I have mentioned too to some people that I'm going to take Dave's classes as well, and I will post them on my website. It's kevinhinckley.com. And usually when I teach classes, I try, whether it's an education week or wherever, I try and put them there. And that sounds like I'm doing a wonderful service. It's actually self-serving, as opposed to when I get a lot of requests for, wow, can I get those notes? And I can just say, hey, it's at kevinhinckley.com. Just go there, and it works very, very nice.
By date?
Right.
By date, is that?
Yeah, it should be. I'll have it listed under cruise. And then the classes that we teach, we'll just post on there. Okay. And then we'll get the audio up and running there. That's it. When the red light comes on, we're
not boring.
Okay. Actually, as I was listening to Dave speak, what I've got prepared is kind of fits, as often it happens when I get a chance to speak with Dave, is that these kind of go hand in glove. And one of the values, I think, of hearing this approach is that not only when we're looking at the Mayan civilizations in the next few days, but also in your studies of the scriptures, you get a chance to begin to understand from a symbolism standpoint, the scriptures really start to live. Now I'm going to take that one step farther in terms of saying that one of the things that I think that Isaiah and so many of the other great prophets did is that scriptures have not just the symbolism, but...
Well, a very good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Linda, your pork chopping consultant here, with a friendly reminder that in 15 minutes' time, the big port information and shopping show will take place in the Stardust. Seats are already getting full. We're almost out of coupon booklets, so whatever you do, wherever you are, make sure you make your way there now. Now, my best recommendation would be enter on deck 6 into the Stardust. You're going to have tables set up with your maps for the first 3 ports of call, something to write with, raffle tickets, a free gift for everyone who attends, and whatever coupon booklets are left, you will get your opportunity to get those for free. Now make sure at least one person from each stateroom does attend, as it is some great information that will definitely help you save time and money when going ashore this week. We're going to have lots of fun, but more importantly, you're going to get lots of helpful tips to help you, like arrival and departure times, docking locations, and those very useful port maps. I'll see you all there. I'll start exactly at 11:45, and it'll be brief but fun. I'll see you there.
Part of what we're going to find is not just in looking at scriptures, not just do we look at symbolisms, but the layers that are embedded in these scriptural things that we're going to be looking at. So, and the beautiful thing about the layered approach, again, whether it's Isaiah or Jacob or Zenoch or anybody else, is that it works at every layer. So you get a chance to be taught and learn it, but then get underneath it. And so part of what I want to talk about today is the layered approach to kind of augment. Cancel out all that symbolism stuff. We're doing the layers. So hopefully, you're going to be able to pick up on some great things here. All right. Angels. I want to know the name of the two angels, Hark and Herald. Everyone's got it all wrong. Angels don't wear halos anymore. I forget why, but scientists are working on it. It's not easy to become an angel. First you die, then you go to heaven, then there's still a flight training to go through, then you got to agree on those angel clothes. Yeah, that would be a boy. When an angel gets mad, he takes a big deep breath and counts to 10. When he lets out his breath, somewhere there's a tornado. Angels have a lot to do and they keep very busy. If you lose a tooth, an angel comes through the window and leaves money under your pillow. Then when it gets cold, angels go south for the winter. All angels are girls because they got to wear dresses and boys didn't go for it. Some of the angels are in charge of helping heal sick animals and pets. If they don't help the animals get better, they help the child get over it. That's kind of cool. I don't get why, what I don't get about angels is why when someone's in love, they shoot arrows at them. It just makes no sense. Angels talk all the way while they're flying you up to heaven. The main subject is where you went wrong before you got dead. It's probably my favorite one. Where you went wrong before you got dead. My guardian angel helps me with math, but he's not so much good at science. Okay. Well, that said, foolishness aside, why don't you turn over to Ether 2? There is just some, because this is going to be one of those great places where we watch symbolism and layers come together to teach us something that we're able actually to use on a regular basis in our lives. I'll start here. When it came to pass that when they came down into the valley of Nimrod, the Lord came down and talked with the brother of Jared, and he was in a cloud, and the brother of Jared saw him not. And it came to pass. Now, by the way, from this, we get this sense that the brother of Jared is talking to the Lord how often? All the time. Okay, we have this nice long conversation going. He doesn't see him, but he's having these conversations. So it comes to pass, verse 6, they did travel in the wilderness, and they did build barges in which they did cross many waters, being directed continually by the hand of the Lord. So part of what we're getting here, before you ever see the building of the other barges, is that they have already built barges on a regular basis, and they're using them to get across shorter spaces. And it came to now, it came to pass that at the end of 4 years, the Lord came again unto the brother of Jared and stood in a cloud and talked with him. Now, I want to stop on this one for just a second. Because this is one of those places where if we're not careful, I think we can misunderstand a little bit what's going on here. Because I hear this one taught a lot in church, and it works at one level, but I need you to see that there's another layer underneath this. Generally, when we get to this verse, and we're reading 14, it doesn't matter whether we're doing it in primary or sacrament meeting, and for the space of 3 hours, the Lord did speak unto the brother of Jared and chastened him because he remembered not to call upon the name of the Lord. So usually when we're using this scripture, we use this as a way to demonstrate what? Pray. Okay? And so it's really important that we pray, and if we're not praying, it's a sin, and the Lord will chasten us if we're not praying on a regular basis. Now, let me ask that. Does that work at that level?
Yeah.
Sure. And we've used it in primary classes. I grew up with all of this. Okay? Now, let's take a step back from that, though. Let's go backwards. When they're in the valley of Nimrod, the Lord came down and talked with Brother Jared. Brother Jared's talking to him. They manage to get the barges built. They cross many waters. They do that. Okay? Now, if we just take it at face value, what we're saying is that the Lord and Jared and the brother of Jared have been talking back and forth for quite a while. And then for whatever reason, they're going to get to this spot and the brother of Jared forgets to pray for 4 years. Does that make sense?
No.
No, it doesn't. And so that's why I say it works in a layer of saying that this is what we want to use this for, to teach prayer. Wonderful. But let's make sure that we get underneath that and say, there must be something else happening here because you have this wonderful prophet who is in a place that in a relatively short period of space, he's going to see the Lord. You see the finger, then the Lord. All these great things are going to happen. I really don't think this wonderful man suddenly quit praying for 4 years and the Lord had to chase him because he wouldn't pray. Doesn't make sense. So let's go backwards and figure out kind of what happened here. In fact, let's go back. If we look at the pattern of this, we know that so far they were able to get the languages not being confused. They were able to get safely out of all of the cacophony that was going on at the Tower of Babel. And now they're going to get up. So if I were to ask you, what do you think might be what do you think might be happening here? As opposed to suddenly he just quit praying.
Decided to stop for a while, and maybe even too long.
The part of it was that maybe they were just kind of exhausted. This had been hard. Maybe the place they stopped was kind of a nice, comfortable place. We're just going to kind of rest here. Yeah?
I think they just got distracted. They just got busy.
Could have been. Could easily be that, couldn't it? In other words, we're supposed to be doing something here, because remember, back here, the Lord is actually going to tell them in verse 7, the Lord would not suffer that they should stop beyond the sea, but that he would come down, but they should have come forth even to the land of promise. So like Lehi, they know sitting out there somewhere is this land of promise. We're going to get to go there, and it's going to be nice. So it's possible that they got a little distracted about where they are, but part of this is that this is nice, kind of like Bountiful for the Nephites, but there's something greater coming. But where is it?
Somewhere else.
Somewhere else. And where somewhere else? Way over there. Okay.
Well, yes, they probably didn't want, maybe lacked the courage and the faith to keep going.
Why would they suddenly lack the courage?
It's been on for a while.
Because it's the big waters.
It's the big waters.
Yes.
We got the little ones.
That's right.
You
can't see across the big woods.
And so now we were... Yeah. So suddenly now we're in a position where we have done so far, and we've talked to the Lord, but we are pretty intimidated by now this next leap that we're supposed to do. And it's huge. Okay?
Where do you think they were?
You know, if they're going north out of there, Dave, where would you say... You think they ended up at? Because they're heading, they're coming north, come out of what would be Babylonia.
Hugh Nibley suggests that they go east across the Asian continent.
Yeah.
So crossing waters across the Asian continent.
Right.
That's what Hugh suggests.
So
would that be subcontinent or north of the?
Through like Mongolia, through.
Yeah.
That's what Hugh Nibley suggests.
So they're kind of pooped.
Yes, I don't want to jump into your discussion too much, but the Jaredite civilization, if there are links between it and the Mesoamerican civilization, there's a lot of Asian features in some of their works. So some have suggested that the American civilization that coincides time-wise with the Jaredite civilization is called the Olmec civilization. And with their stuff, there is a lot of Asian stuff, which would coincide with what Hugh Nibley argues. But we don't know scripturally. It's just what Hugh suggests, is that they go east, because there's more small bodies of water going that way. If you go west, you're going to hit the Mediterranean, and you're just going to zip. Right across. So they're not the smaller bodies of water that they've run into. So
yeah. How do we know that they left, you said, from Babylon or from wherever?
Around the Tower of Babel.
We know where that is?
Iraq.
Yeah. Okay.
You were asking, why did they get discouraged with this big or complacent or whatever word you used? I'm also thinking that they've come out of something, they've gotten in many ways, they're away from the destroying influences, so they're a little safer and they can breathe easy and go, oh, we've made it, instead of we're there.
Okay, I think there's some of that, yeah.
Calling upon the Lord, we know, as associated with Babylon,
And the saints in the more recent past were chastised for not building temples. And maybe he was associating this with settle down here. You're settling for something that's less than.
Okay, we're getting close here. She says, one of the things that, for instance, the early saints got in trouble with, especially those in Missouri, when the Lord said, build a temple. And they weren't, and by the way, the temple that they were looking at was a massive complex, much bigger than the Kirtland Temple. It's like 48 temples. Have fun.
Calling upon the name of the Lord.
And calling upon the name of the Lord. But it, don't you think there was also a sense of overwhelm? Well, it's like, this one, we've gotten to this point, but now the task in front of us is too big, and we've got to figure out how to do this, and we're being a little bit overwhelmed.
Also, there are prayers and prayers. We can say almost broke prayers if we're busy and don't have any huge problems. And if we're in deep trouble, we're apt to do some heavy duty praying.
I think that's really true. But again, we kind of also go back and say, but this is the brother of Jared we're talking about. This guy has done some pretty good praying. Yes, ma'am.
Perhaps it was at this time where they started to rely on their own strength versus the arm of the Lord, and they stopped trusting in God's strength.
Does that make sense to you guys?
Yeah.
Yep.
That there is the point, especially when now we're facing a bigger task, that's like, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to figure this out myself, and then we'll take it to the Lord for confirmation. It's the confirmation myth, I call it, which is somehow I'm supposed to take care of all of this stuff, and I want his rubber stamp at the end. And I think this is one of those things where they go, okay, we did the little things, but whoa, look at this thing. And we're supposed to get, it's bigger, it's more intimidating. Lord, we'll get back to you in about 4 years when we figured out how to engineer this thing. And somewhere in here, they started believing in the, and listen how that process works. Well, I think you're so close on this. All right. He's going to go to...
I think it's significant to remember that the Lord talked with Jared for 3 hours, and he also chastised him.
He did chastise him, and I think
it doesn't say he chastised him for 3 hours, which we so often hear.
Well, and that's why I think we can be overly simplistic and say he didn't pray, and so he got a tongue lashing for 3 hours for not praying. That's why I say far more, and the bigger sin here is, I think that they were starting to, rather than trust in this wonderful God that will guide them, they were going to try and do it themselves. Yeah.
We're just still at the point of thinking that the earth was flat and that you would drop off the end. Because every other time they could probably see land.
Yeah, who knows what it is.
It's flat because of the moment talking about how the sun moved back.
Now, why I think this becomes so important, and this is where we start to say, let's drop another level here. Is that if you just see this as a story of how they prayed and got on the barges and got to the other side, it works at that level. But I need you to see it at a different level, and that is at your level. Because everybody and everything in the Book of Mormon becomes either a warning or an example. A warning or an example. Here comes the example. Brothers and sisters, you are the barges. I want you to see it at that level. In other words, what you're about to watch here is kind of the plan of salvation in action. And I want you to picture yourselves as literally the barges and the way that this is approached. Okay? Now, when we look at this, we're going to see verse 17. I'm trying to think if I put verse 17. Yeah, okay. 17, and they were built after a manner that was exceedingly tight, and I know John, by the way, has a fun time with this one, even that they would hold water, how?
Like
into a dish, and the bottom thereof was?
Tight.
Like into a dish, and the sides thereof were?
Tight.
Yeah, and the sides thereof were peaked, and the top thereof was tight?
Like a dish.
And the length thereof was the length of a tree, long, and the door thereof, when it was shut, was?
Tight.
Like a dish. Okay? So basically, the most important thing we know about these barges,
tight like a
they're tight like a dish. Yeah, if you haven't got that yet, you're not listening very closely. Okay? Now, if somebody can jump over for just a second to Ether 6, verse 7. Oh, wait a minute, I put it here. This is so good. Dang it, good, wow. And it came to pass that when they were buried in the deep, there was no water that could hurt them, their vessels being
tied like
unto a dish, and they were also tied like unto another boat.
The Ark of Noah.
Okay, what did you just learn?
That the Jaredites knew about Noah.
Yes, and that their barges, in all likelihood, could have been very much like the Ark. Okay? In fact, there's some suggestion, depending on which way they go, that they might have even perhaps been able to see the Ark if it was still sitting somewhere where they were going. Yeah.
There's a verse in Genesis that talks about the window on the Ark.
Okay.
If you look at the footnote, it's the Hebrew word sohar, which...
keep going.
I'm forgetting exactly the word that it uses to describe it, but the rabbis suggest that it's a stone that has light.
Okay, there you go. Let me just repeat that, because you're exactly right. Because I think that's the important thing. There's two things that you need to know about the Ark. Number one is this idea of the window that is translated sohar. And what that means is light. It means midday. Okay? And in the Mishnah, which is the Hebrew traditions, the belief was that Noah had a stone that would glow and would give them light in the darkness, and that's what the window was. Because it would also be tied like a dish, which doesn't work if you have a window. And so that's going to play an important role when the brother of Jared then begins to figure out what do I need to do going forward. Okay. Second thing about the Ark is that the Ark, before they prepared it, is sealed with a pitch. Okay. And the pitch is called, in Hebrew, is kafar. And it's the one word, if you're looking for the word atonement in the Old Testament, it is kafar. It's a covering. It's like the kaput, the skull cap. Okay, it's a covering. And that's being used, in other words, that here you have the Ark is being covered in a pitch before it goes out into the deep. And it's being covered in the atonement. Now, that's why I say we begin to relate barges to us, and that we are the barges. And as we're about to make this journey, how is the Lord going to protect us in the deep? He's going to cover us with a kippur. Okay, that's why, for instance, in the Garden of Eden, you get this this sense that now we are naked, we're innocent, and the first thing that they try and do is come up with what is, in essence, a fake kafar, which is we're going to do the fig leaves. That's a start, but real kippur involves the shedding of blood. So he's going to make a coat of skins for them because real kafar is going to require sacrifice. Okay? Now, for them to be able to move forward across the deep, they're going to have to be covered in the kafar, in the covering. And this is about what's about to happen here before they make this journey, this kind of plan of salvation jump through the deep. Okay. Yeah, here's all of that we were just talking about. And the interesting thing, and Brother Nibley talks quite a bit about this as well, is the fact that this idea of the window, the sohar, makes it into a lot of other religious documents, not just Hebrew, but some Indian texts as well are pretty heavy on this. Okay. Now, so here's the next part. Okay, so if we're not going to try and solve it ourselves, here's verse 19. Behold, O Lord, in these... let me back up before I go here. sometimes you have to really kind of see what's going on, and maybe it's because as a therapist, I kind of think I see, yeah?
Is the Lord having these boats through the water? How are they being propelled through the water?
Hold on to that. Hold on to that idea. We're going there. Yeah. Ah.
And so what the Lord was doing, from my perspective, was not degrading, et cetera, either, but reestablishing the need for a relationship between the two.
Ah.
And helping him to feel a need for purification, for comforting, for his
life. See, one of the reasons why I like doing these things is that you guys come kind of locked and loaded. You know, it's like my Monday morning discipline class lights isn't a bar, where we just throw something out and everybody brings their knowledge with you and we all get taught. Beautiful concept. Yeah, the idea of chastening is to be made chaste, is to be cleansed. So this isn't as an angry disciplinary thing. It's a cleansing. It's a purifying. It's getting ready for what's going to happen here. Okay. Now, here's the other thing that I think happens. The Lord is going to tell him, look, quit trying to rely on yourself. Let me give you the blueprint. Here's the boat. And it's going to be like the barges, bigger, going to require a few more things. And I have to think there is that moment when Jared is looking back on it and going, wow, that's a great boat. Look at that. And then I think he's bringing Sister Jared over, and he goes, look what we done. Isn't that cool? And I think it was Sister Jared who would look at it, as it is with most, you know, male projects. We're doing things, and we're feeling really good about ourselves, and what happens? You bring in the better half, and what does she say? You missed a spot. And so I have a feeling that here's Sister Jared looking at this thing and going, well, it's good, huh? But there are some flaws, really.
There's only one window.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And except for the fact that there's no air, no light, and no steering, it's not bad. I can see him going, you're right. I wondered about that part. Well, I'm not pulling the kids and the animals in there until you figured out how to do, you know, the light, the air, and the steering thing. So now what he's going to do, verse 19. Behold, O Lord, in them there is no light. Can't see. Whither shall we steer? How are we going to get where we're going? Also, we shall perish, for in them we cannot breathe. Save it as the air that's in them. Therefore, we shall perish. There are some problems here that need to be resolved. Now, think about in our lives, when you think about some of the struggles that you have been through, and you get to this moment where you say, I have a big task that needs to be taken care of, and this is a little overwhelming. Okay? How am I going to resolve this? And I think there are times like the Jaredites that we remain frozen too long because we're expecting to have to solve it ourselves. And the Lord, if he does nothing else through the entire Old Testament, he keeps saying over and over and over, let me fight your battles. I will do it. Just follow. And by the way, and I say this for all the perfectionists and obsessive compulsive folks in the group, one of the irritating things about the way the Lord works is that A, he will fight your battles. B, he has a plan, and C, he ain't going to tell you what that is until you get going. Because if he tells you too much, then you mess with it, you change it, you start checklisting it, you know, all of the things that we get caught up in the church. Okay? He just wants you to move, get rolling. Now, so here comes this one. Lord, these are great boats, no light, no air, no steering. And the Lord's going to actually solve it in three different ways. And this is the way he also solves ours as well. And the Lord said unto the brother of Jared, Behold, thou shalt make a hole in the top and a hole in the bottom when thou suffer for error and stop the hole and receive. Okay, now, the answer to the first problem is error. How's the Lord going to resolve that one?
Just a hole.
He told a direct answer. He just told him, do this. Oh, okay, got it solved. Thank you. Okay?
His object wasn't to make holes in it. So
to him, that wasn't logical. It wasn't going to make sense because we just put the pitch on it. And we're trying to cover all this thing. We had thought of that, and the Lord says, no, it'll be okay. Just do it this way. And, you know, and if you open it up and water comes in, then
plug it.
Close it. Yeah. Now, so number one, if we're struggling with things in our life, sometimes the Lord will give us direct, solid answers, and we'll know exactly how we're supposed to go. Most of us would like those answers more often than we get them, although sometimes it's the exact reason why a lot of times we don't ask. How come you haven't prayed? Well, because then I might get an answer. I had a lady in one of my groups, and she was struggling with something. I think it was with her at work or something like that. Anyway, I said, well, have you prayed about it? And she said, no. I said, okay. But she says, but I know what I'm supposed to do. And I said, really? She says, yeah, I pretty much know. You know, I feel good about it. Have you prayed about it? No. But you know the answer, what you're supposed to do. Yeah, but you haven't prayed about it. No. Why? And she thought about it, and then she said, we almost said it together, then I would be responsible for the answer. If I was told what I'm supposed, then I would know. I said, but you already know. Yeah. I said, so you're so busted because the Lord has already told you. Just because you didn't ask doesn't mean you don't know. Yeah. Isn't that a bummer? Sometimes we're waiting for these formal things. I've got I'm on our state high council, and just this last week, I was running over to a business getting ready to, before we left, and I ran into a good gentleman who I know has just been called as bishop, but he was actually sustained yesterday. And as he come by, roll down the window, I says, hey, how you doing? He goes, I'm fine. He forgets that I'm on the high council. I know what's happening here. You doing okay? Yeah. I said, congratulations. He says, about what? Oh, yeah, you're on the high council. Yeah. I said, can I just throw something out to you? And he says, yeah. Really, I mean, now it's honest time. It's like, okay, I can drop the pretense. I'm freaking out. Yeah, I know. And I said, an interesting thing is going to happen to you if it hasn't already happened. From my own experience, the mantle already starts to descend before the setting apart takes place. I says, you already are getting insights and knowledge and inspirations about what's supposed to happen with the ward, and you haven't been officially set apart. And he went, oh, that's true. And I said, yeah, just because the formal setting apart, you've already been called. It's already happening. The Lord is already moving you. And that was a comfort to him because he was already said, I get it. And those of you, anybody been called as bishops? Okay. True?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Twice.
Yeah. It comes. And prayers are like that too. Just because sometimes we're formally not asking doesn't mean that the answers don't start to come to you. Yeah.
When I found out when I was looking into marrying my wife.
Yeah.
Before I even actually went to my father in prayer to ask him, at least a week before, as soon as I thought, can I marry her? Just to myself, I thought I got complete peace.
Yeah. Okay, nice. I got some peace. Yeah.
But then it was difficult because I would ask in prayer, and I never felt like I got an answer. And I finally got to go to somebody and said, well, how did you feel the first time you thought about it?
Yeah. We get those. And that's why I think sometimes the Lord is telling us, but just because it hasn't come in a formal prayer situation. I don't know about you, but I never get prayers on my knees. I get prayers answered on my knees. I'll pray, but the answer doesn't come. I'm more likely to get answers to prayer while I'm driving. For whatever reason, that is the setting where I kind of get it. Okay? So I drive a lot. Yeah, I'm going to drive around the block until I get answered. Okay, so number one, sometimes the Lord is going to answer us on this journey. He's going to give us direct answers. Okay? Do this. Now, here's verse 24. Ye shall be as a whale in the midst of the sea, for the mountain waves shall dash upon you. Nevertheless, I will bring you up out of the depths of the sea, for the winds have gone forth out of my mouth, and also the rains and the floods have I set forth. Okay?
So that's an angel sneezing.
Yeah, it's one of those angels sneezing who's driving that thing. Yeah, exactly. Well, they're not playing Cupid. Okay. So, sometimes the Lord answers our prayers by saying what? Sometimes it's do this, sometimes it is
trust me.
He says no a lot.
What's that?
He says no a lot.
Yes, he does say no a lot. But some of those times, like, I know I'm supposed to move forward, I don't have the whole answers here, I don't know exactly what I'm going to do, but he says, move, start, get going. About how Elder Oaks has talked about how that we're supposed to get moving on that. You're exactly right. Okay?
One step into the dark.
Yeah, Elder Packer talks that about. Yeah.
One step into the dark, and then the Lord takes the light forward.
Now, here's where let me go back again, and maybe it's because in my practice I seem to have a lot of perfectionists that just happen to show up into my office for counseling. Where they have to know every step down the road or they're not going to move. And the idea of having to move without being able to know exactly is very frightening, and it's anxiety producing because I have to trust. And the hardest thing you can ask some people to do is trust. Let the Lord do it. Well, I'm not sure I want to let him do it. I'm not sure he's going to get it right. Really? Well, at least he's not going to do it my way. I've got a wonderful gentleman that I've been working with for a little while now that struggles with a pornography addiction. And the Lord has really done some marvelous things for him. And he knows that the Lord is slowly removing this from his brain. He came to me not too long ago and he says, I'm getting this. He says, but this hasn't gone the way I thought it was supposed to go. Yeah. What do you have in mind? He said, well, it's 12 steps, right? And I said, yeah, we use the 12 step thing. Okay, he says, so I figured I show up with my life. He says, you're going to think this is dumb. And I'm going, yeah, I know where you're going with this. I'm going to show up with my life. You very carefully reach in. You pull this pornography thing out in 12 steps, translated to 12 weeks. Yeah. And you leave the rest of my life exactly the way it was. That's what I'm expecting. He says, it's not working that way. No, that's not. What's happening? Well, it's changing everything in my life. I said, yeah, that's how the Lord does that. That's why C.S. Lewis is so beautiful about saying, the Lord doesn't want your obedience. He wants you. He wants the whole thing because he's going to rebuild it in a way and take over. And he says, so everything, every other aspect of my life is being changed. And so often when the Lord is trying to move us in a certain direction, we have our idea in our mind of what it's supposed to look like and how soon. That's why those of you who struggle with kids that are gone prodigal on you and they're just kind of being strange and you're wanting to say, Lord, fix him, change him, make this happen, make him hurt, make him bleed enough that he'll now turn and make it happen by tomorrow so he still gets his eagle. And we're trying to lay down all of the, I want you to heal, but according to my timetable and the way I want it done. I'm going to try and prescribe how you do this. You're God, just follow my path, I'll tell you. But I just, because we're a little nervous about him taking over and doing it his way. Okay? So, sometimes the Lord's going to do it by saying, do this. Sometimes he's going to say, trust me. Now, here comes the next part. Wherefore, and I think this is the part we misunderstand just a little bit. Wherefore, what will ye that I should prepare for you, that you may have light, when you're swallowed up in the depths of the sea? So what's the Lord asking? What do you want to do? Okay? How are you going to... And this is where we might have a tendency to go, okay, then I'm supposed to come up with this solution and kind of get confirmed for that. But now let's go back to the idea. What did we learn about Noah?
That he very likely had a stone similar to the one proposed by the brother Jared.
That's right. So if the brother Jared says, okay, now what do you want me to do? Where did the brother Jared go to get the solution to what to do? He went to?
Scriptures,
or at least go. He went to the prophets and said, what have the prophets done in this situation? Noah had a stone. Oh, well, maybe that worked. Okay? Now, I love this. In Ether 3, so he goes out, he comes up with the stones. What have you come up with?
Thank
you. Okay? And what he was going to come up with was, I'm going to go to the prophets to find out, and the scriptures to find out what's been done in the past. Okay? Now behold, O Lord, do not be angry with thy servant because of his weakness before thee, for we know that thou art holy and dwellest in the heavens, and we're unworthy before you. You see him, he's putting in the disclaimers, isn't he? Why? Yeah. Because of our fall, because of the fall, our natures have become evil continually. This is what he's setting up. Nevertheless, thou hast given us a commandment to call on thee that we may receive according to our desires. And I wish we had time. I don't know if we'll get a chance on the screws to talk about how what Joseph F. Smith calls the education of our desires, to where our desires, kind of like the two spindles that Dave was talking about, where our desires and the Lord's desires become one. They merge.
Isn't that a cultural confirmation again of the
sources? Yeah, it really is. O Lord, look upon me in pity. Turn away thine anger from this people. Suffer not they go forth and rage deep in darkness. But behold these things which I have molten out of the rock. He can't even... I just have to think. It's another one of these wonderful moments where he says, okay, we've got this boat, and it's beautiful, and I've been given direction, and I heard that Noah had these, and so now I've molten these things, and now he's going to go to the Lord and say,
I don't know what they're called.
Behold these things. Basically, I'm looking for a miracle, and what I've got is rocks. Can you do something with the rocks? Okay, now, let me go back to those of you who may have served as bishop or Relief Society president or primary president where you've just really been overwhelmed. Don't you have that moment? Lord, all I have is, I got rocks. You know, you got all these great and marvelous things and you've done all these wonderful things, so you're going to call me and I got rocks. We just don't feel like we have very much, and we get overwhelmed by the size of what we're being asked to do. I can't do this.
Then the Lord teaches us in the Doctrine of Temperance about how a very large ship is kept workways by very small.
Yeah, and here we're going to talk about this small thing here in just a second. Elder Holland. Things. The brother of Jared hardly knew what to call them. Rocks undoubtedly did not sound very inspiring. I've got rocks. Here, standing next to the Lord's magnificent handiwork, the impeccably designed and marvelously unique seagoing barges, the brother of Jared offers his contribution. Rocks. As he eyed the sleek ships the Lord had provided, it was a moment of genuine humility. Now, again, if the Lord is going, if we go back to, we were just talking about Nephi, and they go back for the plagues of Laban. I love the moment where Nephi is going to say to the brethren, "You guys wait here. I'll go get the plagues from Laban, because the Lord can slay Laban the same way as he slew the Egyptians for Moses." What's he saying? The Lord is going to take care of Laban. How? He's going to kill him. Isn't that great? You wait here. Keep the car running, AC on full. I will be right back. The Lord's going to slay Laban. I'll get the plates. I'll come right back. And it'll be great. And so even there is that moment when, and I won't take time to go to it, short version. Lunch is waiting. So. Where Nephi is like creeping through the dark streets of Jerusalem. Don't you see that? He's like creep, creep, creep. And he goes and it's like, it's Laban. And he's asleep. He's not dead yet. He looks dead. He's mostly dead. and he's going to love this. And then, let me explain the next part here. A side note. Anybody see the movie Up? Okay. Remember the dogs? Mm-hmm. And they've got like little voice thingy on them?
Yeah.
And they'll be, "We must get the little mailman up." And they'll go, "Squirrel!"
Yeah.
They just get, okay, now we're back to going up, "Squirrel!" And they just get distracted. Okay? Sisters, as men, we have a gene similar to that in our brain. We do, and we are incapable of walking past a computer screen with like football on it. So when we go to Walmart, and my wife and I will be walking through there, and Cindy will say, "Okay, we're on our way to go get toilet paper or whatever," and I'll walk by the entertainment section, and we're looking for toilet paper, and I'll go, "Football!" And I'm drawn to that. I have no choice. It's in my genes. I have to look there. Look what happens to Nephi. You know, and it's, I think part of it's the metallurgist part of it, Dave. But part of it is just plain male. He's going to go, "The Lord's going to kill Laban. There he is. So now the sword." And if you listen, he's like, "Look at this sword. And the steel is fine. And there's a handle." And there. And can't you see Nephi in the middle of the night? He's kind of going, he's a young man with a sword. And he's just like drawn to that. What can he do? And it's right in the middle of that, the Lord says to him, "Kill Laban." No, that's not how it works. You slay him like the Egyptians. You drowned him. It's something very cool. I get the plague. No, kill Laban. And see, I think we get to those points where we say, "Wow, the Lord is going to require a miracle for that primary class." And the bishop goes, "Yeah, it's you. You're going to be the one to have to do that." The Lord does do miracles. And sometimes that small means we're talking about
is us.
He uses our hands to do this. Okay? And that's why we get to look at verse 5 of Ether 3. Well, verse 4. "I know, O Lord, thou hast all power, and whatsoever thou wilt for the benefit of man, therefore touch these stones." Okay? Now, verse 5. "Behold, O Lord, thou canst do this. We know that thou art able to show forth great power, which looks small." to the understanding of man. President Benson would talk about the fact that the greatest miracle that ever happens is not the parting of the Red Sea or the turning of water into wine. The greatest miracle that happens that will look small to men is what?
Changing
of a heart. That it just happens within. And you may not even notice it in the short run. But the greatest miracle is the changing of hearts. And it's by small means that these things occur. Okay? All right. I want to finish then with this. I want you to hop over to Ether 6, because there is another beautiful concept here. Okay, so now they get, by the way, when it comes to the millennium, don't you want to see this movie? You know, if we're going to watch the Jaredite movie tonight, that's one I want to see. Or, Elder Maury Ankomer is going to be here to talk about his experience with the barges. I am so there. That's why I'm waiting for the millennium. All of these great, you know, movies and fire signs and stuff. Okay. Verse 5. It came to pass that the Lord God caused that there should be a furious wind upon the face of the waters toward the promised land. And thus they were tossed upon the waves before the sea. Okay, I was thinking about this morning, watching how the ship was bouncing on some of the waves, and you can hear and there were mild swells, but you can just hear the ship crashing through all of these things this morning. Last year we were on, and some of you understand this completely, we were on the very bottom of the boat, and we thought the ship was going to break. You know, middle of the night, boom, and we thought something had happened. It was just a ship hull bouncing through large waves, and it just rattles the whole place. Okay? So, the Lord caused that there should be a furious wind. So there's a storm at sea pushing these barges. Look at verse 8. It came to pass that the wind did what?
Never cease.
Never cease to blow. And then verse 11 tells us, how long were they in a storm at sea being pushed by the wind? 344 days at sea. Yeah, the seasickness would be like over the top. If you're that. Okay. Now, fascinating part about that is, then we look at the bottom of verse 12. They land in the promised land. They set their feet upon the shores. They bow themselves on the face. They humble themselves. They are so glad to be out of the boat. And did shed tears of joy before the Lord because of the multitude of what?
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain speaking from the bridge again. Well, you might have seen that we stopped the ship and turned around almost 15 minutes ago, and it was due to some indication we have that we might have got something in our propeller, a rope or a fishing net or something. This is what happened with big ships. It happened with small ships as well as small leisure boats. So anyway, we stopped the ship and turned around and reversed the propeller, and hopefully we have get rid of these ropes or whatever it was. This means that we don't have any delay to Roatan tomorrow or to any of the other ports during our cruise here. So thank you for your attention, ladies and gentlemen, and hope you have an excellent day aboard. Thank you.
We under the chances. We're talking about propelling the boat. Oh my gosh. How great is that? Man does it, it gets snagged in the propeller. The Lord does it, they get there right on time. That's amazing. Okay.
Next year's lecture.
Higher rate for that, actually. Because of the multitude of his tender mercies. Now, so when the wind that continually pushed them to the promised land is the best, most powerful explanation that I can come up with for grace. That's the grace of God. They didn't deserve it. They didn't earn it. They had to trust it. It went. It took them their time, the Lord's time, in His way, and it got them to the promised land. And all they had to do was get in the boat and follow and trust. That's grace. And part of what we're going to be talking about in some of the other classes here is that I want to begin to fold in this idea that says, especially on, is our class on Saturday, Dave?
Yep.
When we talk about prayer and how to tell promptings, the Lord's promptings to us from our own thinking that we did it, we're going to have to rely on grace and put ourselves in a place to really hear Him. But the lesson that comes out of here, if I can just wrap it up with this, is that we are the barges. It's us that is being moved across the sea. And then sometimes He's going to tell us what we need to do. Sometimes we're just going to have to trust Him. We're not knowing. We just have to keep moving. But always, 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 His grace will push us where we need to be if we're willing to get into the boat and hang on. I bear you my testimony that power is there, the righteousness of your lives, and as you spend time with one another, if you get to, this kind of one of those reaffirming things, you get saints from all over the place, and you find common knowledge and common understanding from a group of people on a boat being led by grace. I just think it's a wonderful experience. And I leave that with you.
Okay, we'll break for lunch. We'll be back here in an hour and 35. Okay, 2 o'clock.
I think we're good. I'm not going to leave my computer, but...
What did Gilbert? Did Gilbert call back till I died?
He didn't come back up.
Oh, he fell asleep. Better off there.
So you did the splits, huh? That's probably mine. That's mine.
So what's the next step here? We go to the bathroom.
Same place or something different? Not too many other places.
Fine. Whatever.
Oh,
really? Take more time in there. That's it for lunch.
It takes a lot.
And then afterward, go to the dinner tonight. Sit down at the big one. 7 o'clock tonight.
There's something down on 7th floor.
Another one. Are you going down to get Gilbert or not?
I'm taking mine to the room.
Let's leave some. Let's take chairs. Here.
Hey, all right, you want me to leave my strip?
I'm going to put this in the room, I think. Oh, I better turn that recording off. Here, I'm still recording away. Okay.